Chapter 2. A word here about the difference between celestial time and time as it is experienced on Earth. Time still passes in eternity, but slower. Much, much slower. A day in heaven passes by at about the same rate as approximately 57 Earth years. When God took his first, until this past week, his only vacation, 4.6 billion years ago, it was the Hadean Aeon. There was no oxygen, and the Earth was basically still a molten ball, fresh and smoking from the Big Bang some 10 billion years before. That had been a total accident, of course. God enjoys the occasional morning toke, but sometimes rues the results. Hammerhead sharks? Platypuses? The baboon's ass? Come on, you'd cut back, wouldn't you? It would be thousands of years before there were even oceans. A guy could take a little time out, right? When he took this week off, it had been the year 1609 on Earth, the height of the Renaissance, which God had been enjoying enormously. Copernicus, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, what's not to like? When he left, tackle box tucked under his arm, fishing hat jauntily perched on his head, King Lear was being performed on the London stage, while, across town, Bacon worked on De Sapientia Veterum Liber. El Greco, tongue pressed into his upper lip in concentration, brush trembling, was painting the opening of the fifth seal. Galileo was squinting through his prototype telescope, his eyes alighting for the first time on Jupiter's four satellite moons. Monteverde had recently finished composing L'Orfeo. A good time to go fishing, God thought. When he returned from the far-flung countryside of heaven, refreshed and bearing trout, almost exactly 400 years had passed. It was the year 2011 on Earth. As we know, it had not been an uneventful four centuries. God is a fast reader, the fastest. He is capable of digesting thousands of dense documents near simultaneously while watching the videotapes and DVDs and clicking through the computer files that make up his briefing on the latter part of the time he has missed. It takes God the whole morning and a little of the lunch hour to get up to speed. He quickly learns a torrent of geography. Auschwitz, Buchenwald, Belsen, Guantanamo, Belfast, Cambodia, Vietnam, Flanders, Ypres, Nagasaki, Hiroshima, Rwanda, Bosnia. From time to time, Jeannie, Lance, and Seb jump at their desks as they hear the muffled screams and cries. As he works through the 20th century, pausing regularly to throw up, God learns about strange, incredible new concepts, about capitalism and communism, about nuclear deterrence and mutually assured destruction, about the military-industrial complex, about pro-life and zero tolerance, about junk bonds and short-selling, gazumping and negative equity, fatwa and jihad, ethnic cleansing and repatriation. Photos taken in hot, dusty squares in Arabic countries, two gay kids being hanged, a woman, an adulteress, crying, buried up to her shoulders in sand, a crowd of men hefting stones visible a few yards away. He turns to the computer and clicks on a file on the desktop marked Islamic Fundamentalism, Beliefs and Practices. Something called the Taliban. Right, what was going on with these dudes? Busting some badass beards from the looks of things. A few minutes later, Jeannie can hear muffled screams and swearing coming through those heavy cathedral-sized doors, stuff being kicked over. God reads about the burqa and the hijab. The deal, according to these dudes, seemed to be something like this. All men are barely contained rapists who can be provoked by even a glimpse of an ankle. So, chicks have to march about in head-to-toe black sacks. But all women are basically temptress whores who want to fuck all men all the time. So if one of them somehow breaks a good, honest, married man down by wantonly flashing, say, a kneecap at him, and he gives in and fucks her, then it is suitable for her to be literally stoned to death, a big circle of men hurling rocks at her fucking head, while the guy gets a parking ticket. He reads on, a list of stuff the Taliban guys were resolutely not having: pork, pig, pig oil, human hair products, satellite dishes, cinematography, music, and equipment that produces the joy of music, pool tables, chess, masks, alcohol, tapes, computers, VCRs, television, anything that propagates sex, wine, lobster, nail polish, firecrackers, statues, sewing catalogs, pictures, and Christmas cards. Sewing catalogs? He reads about the execution of homosexuals, the stoning and whipping of people for, well, for not very much, really. About a 16-year-old schoolgirl getting hanged for something called crimes against chastity. Then, for balance, you understand, he watches a quick compendium of the most popular American TV shows, a gangbang of reality buffoonery, get-rich-quick, get-famous-quick nonsense. And, just for a brief moment, he gets a flash of how those Taliban dudes must be feeling, sat there in your cave with your AK-47 and your bowl of mung, thinking about fucking a goat while you're watching America's newest top whore meets the Kardashians. God experiences an urge to ban television himself. A couple of fingers of malt whiskey and a big, tightly packed joint constitute lunch and help get him through more of the recent past: deforestation, globalization, collateral damage, brand awareness, marketing, product placement, corporate sponsorship, inbuilt obsolescence, Republicans. For the remainder of his lunch hour, God weeps. In the outer office, Jeannie has sent the boys off to lunch. She bites her lip as she listens to him sobbing, a sound she has never heard before. Because, despite his chummy, friendly demeanor, God is old school, a tough guy, a man's man. After a while, it is quiet for a long time. When he throws the doors open, he has composed himself. Only the slightest rawness in the voice would give away what has just happened. Jeannie looks up and swallows. He is no longer heartbroken. He simply looks very, very angry. This is actually a good sign, Jeannie thinks. Jeannie, God says softly, his throat raw, his fury quiet and controlled, where is the little bastard?